Accession number 30655, Mr. Clive Sutton, Real 8. So what were bad about the conditions at this new camp? I'm not quite sure where the 28th field engineer were.
They were within the area of the 1st Commonwealth Brigade.
Right, so still in Gloucester Hill or Gloucester?
In the vicinity.
In the valley or on the hill?
I can't remember. I'm sorry, I just cannot remember the geography at that point. It wasn't a happy time.
So what was wrong with the conditions? Why were they worse there?
Well, I think we had a full corporal in charge of two tents. Our tent didn't have a full corporal. If you put a lot of fellas together, they don't, they're scruffy, they're not dirty, they just, you know, we'd cook up a meal in the evening, things like that, and it was like a hobo camp in a way, you know. People didn't, you know, the beds wouldn't be changed from week to week and things like that. It just wasn't think an army camp should be, you know.
And this is because the officers and NCOs weren't carrying out their duties, basically.
Yeah. I mean, in the morning we'd get up, and we wouldn't have breakfast, and we'd go out and just put our overalls on, a briefest of washes. We must have washed because you're not allowed to not shave, so I suppose we must have shaved. You'd go out, and can I tell you a silly story?
Yeah.
We had what we'd call a chuffer.
What's a chuffer?
Well, a chuffer was a 50-gallon drum on three legs with a chimney. And because there was nobody there in the morning, we were still all in our uniforms, and we'd go out. We wouldn't work unless we had to, so we didn't do any work until the warrant officer came. And so, but we'd light this chuffer. So what we'd do, we'd pour fuel in it, and there was holes at the bottom, so you could get about an inch and a half of fuel in it. And we'd pour it in, and we'd drop in a light piece of paper or something, and it would light up, and we'd all stand around.
That's diesel or petrol?
Petrol. Anyway, so we'd all stand around it, keeping warm, you know, for a little while, and that didn't last long. And you took it in turns to relight it. So I've got to remember now. We used to have to wait till it cooled down, put some fuel in, and then it'd start vaporising. And then whoever's turn it was had to put a lighted paper or something, and it'd go boom, and it'd explode out the bottom holes, you know. Everyone would be standing back except the one who'd got to do it, you know. Anyway, so that was, and then finally the queue had come down, I don't know what time, always late, and so, you know, get on and do some work, you know. So we'd work through the day, and it was a miserable camp, you know. There was a jeep stolen, and they suspected people from our camp. I mean, there's only two tents of us, and I think it was them. I think they got $100 for a jeep, which I think they only cost about $240 to make initially. Anyway, and I think there was somebody, I think they did steal it, but there was a lot of trouble over it. And, you know, identity parades, things like this. We ate with the engineer's place, and it was strange because out there, because of all the bread, when they make the bread, they take it around. And because it's, you know, primitive the way they carry it around, they used to cut all the crusts off. So you used to have bread without crusts. But at break time, all the crusts were there in trays on butter and cheese. Because, I mean, there was, as I say, there was a lot of bread out there. And we used to use the ones that we're not supposed to eat, liberally cover it with cheese and butter and eat that. That would be our breakfast because we never used to go home for breakfast. And I was there for, I don't know, you know, if I looked at my letters, I could tell you, but, you know, you said you'd rather not.
Well, it's just you don't want to get bogged down with detail. Yeah. But about how many months?
Oh, weeks. 2 months max.
So to about March?
Yeah, that sounds... It might have been early March. I'll tell you why. Because we went to Japan then. And we went into base workshops for 3 weeks.
So you left Korea in early March?
Yeah.
Now, why did you leave? Was that just the end of the tour, or was it just that unit was going?
I think that's what it was. I think they were going to Christmas Island. Unfortunately, we didn't go in with them, you know.
So you went to Kure?
No, yes, we went to Kure. And we had two base workshops there. We had the one where we lived in.
Is that Rimi base workshops?
Rimi base workshops. And all the vehicles were sent back to there. And what it was, they had two workshops. One where we lived was on the seashore. It was lovely. Nice billets, a nice cookhouse, canteen. Japanese staff to run it, and so food was really good. But we had to wait for a ship, a troop ship. So we had three. We just missed one, fortunately. So they put us into workshops to work.
And what were you doing in there?
Well, the second workshop is where I was in. Was they'd had either two buses used to take us every morning, bring us back in the evening. All Japanese labour, and I was told it was a Mitsubishi Zero factory during the war. Beautifully laid out. You know, running gantries. You wanted an engine down, you just flicked your fingers, and it got a Japanese in each one, and it just run it along the rails, dropped down a rope, and lifted up for you, you know. I mean, it was, you know, and there were jeeps we were working on, and I selected one from my old camp because I knew by the tax sign it was a 79 tax sign, so I said I'll have that one. A little story, we were actually working on the line. Most of the Rimi people there were in charge. They might be craftsmen, but they'd be in charge of making seats and things like that, and stitching, and you know, the Japanese did the work, and they knew the ones who knew what to do. And the big lorries, they would knock them to pieces with the chassis and redo them. So big staff there, a lot of Japanese, and we just worked alongside them. And as I say before, we didn't like Japanese, and suddenly we were working with them, and suddenly, you know, it all gone, you know. You know, we were used to the Asiatic face and things like that, which we weren't initially. And you know, I'd met Koreans who were very clever, you know, who worked for us. Anyway, on this particular day, I knocked skin off my knuckles, and I went to the first aid room to get plaster put on it, and it was all around the room. There was Japanese worker sitting there, of course, but I was English, so I went in. You know, I made me the first one. And he had a look at it, and he was a Japanese medic. He looked at it. He got a bottle and some cotton wool, and he put it on, and I could smell it, and it was petrol on an open wound. Oh, and it didn't half hurt, but of course. And this is quite important. You had to keep a straight face, because, you know, you had to keep face, you know, because it was Japanese looking. And whether it was a way as an antiseptic, I've never heard of it, but it works anyway. I didn't die of poisoning or anything. Anyway, so then, while we were there, which was a very very nice camp, we applied for leave, R&R leave.
They hadn't had any while you were in Korea then?
No.
So did you get it?
Yes, and I'd already arranged, because I was going to try to go from Korea. They used to fly from Korea. And my mother had sent me, and you could do it by postal orders. That's the only way you could do it. Because the money we had was that British Army Forces currency, you know. So I used to draw, I think, about 50 pence a fortnight there in Korea. And because we got free cigarettes, because I used to smoke then. And anyway, we went by train to Tokyo, smashing. And it's a sleeper, like the ones you see on Hollywood films, where they you know, you've got loads of room, and they drop down and make up beds. And lovely food on board. Japanese really cook stuff well. English food, you know, American food. It's American train, I think. Anyway, and so that was overnight trip from Kure to Tokyo. And we had a week in Tokyo. And
where did you stay?
We stayed at the Leaf Centre, which I should remember, but I've lost it for a moment. And
was it a hotel or was it a camp?
It wasn't a hotel and it wasn't a camp, but it was like barracks, I'm pretty sure. And and we were in barracks there. And we used to go out and sightsee really all day long. You know. I didn't go for the carnal pleasures, although they were available to, you know, very, very easily in Japan. One of the reasons was we'd had VD films, and I tell you what, they kind of make you think, oh, you know, it's not worth it, you know. Anyway, so I had a really good week now. I can't recall, I went to the Kodokan, went ice skating or roller skating in the evening, you know, all with Japanese people, and they didn't make any, it was just normal, you know. And we had a really good week. I went to the Imperial Palace, although you can't go in, but, you know, and looked at all the things you have to look at in Tokyo. When I was in Kure, while I was, as I said, I was there for 3 weeks, 2 weeks actual, and we went to a place called, I think it was Iwakuni, but I'm not sure. Iwakuni rings a bell. But in the sea, there was a massive torii. Have you ever come across that? It's a massive arch. Beautiful. And when the tide goes out, you can go out. I've got pictures of looking at it. And there's a temple there. And there was a horse in there, a white horse. And you, for a few coins, you got some food and you put it on so you could eat it. And if nobody bought it food for a few minutes, you got kicking its stall and making a hell of a noise. We went from there to Hiroshima, you know, because nobody we knew, just we were friends, you know, we did, and nobody ever would do things like that. It amazed us. But I think it was fourth class we went on the train, and we thought, oh, we'll have to stay in the night trucks. And it was quite nice, clean, you know, basic travel, and it was cheap. And I don't remember how long it took, less than an hour, I should think. And we spent the day in Hiroshima, and we saw the big memorial there is the industrial building or something, and it's the last one that's standing there, and they keep it as a memorial. And within it, it was the man who's the most badly burned survivor. And we saw him. I've seen him on television since. But we went into an apartment store. It was beautiful, you know. The bomb had been 8 years before, so it was, in terms of time, it wasn't long. And it was a really nice town, city town. You know. And
anything else about your time at Kure?
Nothing comes to mind at the moment. It's just that the people who were posted in Japan had a wonderful time. And the people who went to Korea had such a hard time, but they all got the medals the same as we did. Only I didn't get one. I never got a medal all the time I was in.
So what happened next then?
Well, I was reposted to Egypt. So we went on the Asturias. I don't know if it was the SS Asturias, but the Asturias was the name of the troop ship. And we were down in the depths of the boat on this trip.
What was it like?
It wasn't as nice a boat as the Empire Orwell. I'm dredging that name up from my memory. I think I'm right to say that. But it was okay.
When did you set off on it?
I've got a feeling it was April.
So you've been in Curie about a month?
No, I'd been there about 3 weeks, I think. Yeah. I think that was the time between the two troop ships that used to come in. And anyway, I went back to, went on the, we went back, you know, reverse way to Hong Kong, Singapore, as I said, Colombo. Didn't go ashore at Aden. I think we had a day and a half going back in Hong Kong. But Singapore, we spent the afternoon swimming. There's a beautiful naffy swimming pool there with a great tower diving board. And I used to be a keen swimmer and I could dive well. And I climbed up this and I got to the top and I thought, God, I never realised it was high as this. But of course, you can't go down. So I dived off this thing. And I was all right, but I hurt my back a little bit, so I must have kind of bent it a bit too much. And I've never done a high dive since. I'm trying to think if anything happened. I don't think the weather seems all right coming back, and not a lot in my mind about it. You used to get a little bit of a feeling when you'd be down on the lower deck, drinking a beer in the evening, you know, and the officers would come out on the upper decks in their dinner jackets and short waistcoat type things and smoking their cigars, and there was a feeling of them and us. I mean, if I could have got a commission, I would probably have stayed in, but I was in the wrong thing for that. Really, I didn't get another trade test until just before I came out. My brother, been in base workshops, they were tested, and he got all his trade tests quickly. But because I was out, I was always out in kind of rough areas and on the edge of things, that, you know, it wasn't available. In retrospect, if I'd have actually applied for a, I was silly, if I'd applied for a trade course, they would probably have sent me back to Japan, but I wasn't, nobody to tell me that, you know.
So what happened next? So anything else on the trip? You're going to what, Port Said or Port Suez?
Port Suez is the other end, isn't it? I'm sorry, I had to remember. Port Said we went to. And I don't even remember coming ashore. I remember coming in by a truck, and they picked us up. And they took us to, and I went to, I think it was Fanara. This is, as you go along the road.
Do you know how you spell it?
Fanara, I think. And I was actually posted to a third Royal Horse Artillery unit.
Third Royal Horse Artillery.
Horse Artillery. And that was an LA.
Third Regiment.
Third. Yes, I suppose it would be. And
what were your impressions of them when you joined us?
Oh, superb. Really tops. The officers were good. The camp was smart. And, you know, it was a proper unit. And when we'd been in there, two or three of us were walking along, and we still had our olive greens on from the Far East. And the officer called us over from the other. He was walking on the other side of the road as we were just going through the camp. And he called us over, and we, you know, doubled there, he had salutes and everything. So what have we done now, you know? And he was a commanding officer, and he'd got a terrific war record out in East Africa, out in North Africa. And as a lot of them had been in the, I think the Desert Rats they were. And anyway, he asked us all where we'd come from and what we were doing, and, you know, and he really took an interest in us. Well, a curiosity, if nothing else. And, you know, it makes a difference, really. Anyway, I joined a battery. Now,
do you know which one?
No, I can't remember now. As I say, I would have all this upstairs, but I haven't. I don't know. Terrific as the sergeant in charge, Sergeant Draper, a really super, you know, above average guy. And he'd come all through the North African campaign. The whole regiment had, you know, they were a unit of experienced soldiers.
And you joined them in about April or May?
I'd say about April. I came in November. I would say probably about April. And all the lines were kind of smart. We had four-man tents. The LAD was well equipped.
That you were LAD, third regiment.
Yeah.
So what were you? What was? Tell me about the tents and the conditions. As you know, because it's different. It's a desert, I presume.
Yeah. Well, once again, we only worked in the mornings. We started early, and we actually went into work early. And after about a couple of hours, we'd go in for breakfast. We'd have breakfast. Then we go back and work, and at lunchtime we'd have tiffin. And they were now under a British regiment, so the food wasn't as good as it had been, the Canadian one. But they used to buy food privately, the regiment did, to keep a good diet, salads and things like that, and fruit. And we used to drink prodigious amounts of tea. You know, we'd have a pint mug and we'd have 3 pints of tea because of the heat, you know. And then this was a strange thing. I went to the battery where and we had Cromwell tanks and self-propelled guns. And I said to the sergeant, I'm in the wrong place here. I said, I don't know which A class or B class, and I was, but whichever one was the armoured, I hadn't done. You had to go along for another course. Oh, he said, you'll soon pick it up, don't worry about that. Which is reminding me of another one. And so I worked with somebody else for a while and got the hang of things.
So what were you doing? Tell me what you were doing. Was it on the tank, the Cromwell?
I can tell you about one particular. I can tell you about one particular job we did. And I'd been there not all that long, and they said to me, it was a Cromwell tank. And they said, we've got this Cromwell, we cannot get the brakes right. Everyone's had a go at it. So I said, well, you're the expert, you can't expect me to. Anyway, I changed, and there's a lot of, I don't know if you know what a master cylinder on the brakes. And you've got them on cars and things, and when you hit the brake, it equalises the pressure around to the brakes. But on a tank, you've got tillers, so you've got the steering, and they've all got, and there's all different master cylinders on there. And I'd never driven a tank, I'd never been in one, I didn't even know how to get inside it. And there's a feature about the Cromwell tank that if it ever gets knocked out with the gun, traversed over the hatch, you can't open the hatch. You know, everyone's burned alive because they can't get out. But we had one like that and one modified that swung out sideways. Anyway, I worked on this with an electrician, and we had a go, and we changed what we thought might do the trick. When we tried it in the park, tank park, it worked. The brakes seemed okay. So we got permission to go out through the tank gate. You're not allowed to drive them on the roads out there. You have to have a transporter. But they actually took us out through the tank onto the desert. So the driver had the going along. You know, we're standing up on top, holding the gun, you know, by the turret. Pulled up, he said, seems all right, seems fine. We thought, oh, we've done it, you know, nobody could do it, but we've done it. And the electrician guy had been there a bit longer, he used to do mechanical work with him. And he said, yeah, let me have a drive of it. So he said, well, you can have a little drive, but not long, you know. I mean, we should be able to drive it because we're with the mechanics. Anyway, so, he had a go. No, I had a go before he did. That's right, I had a go. And I drove this thing for a while, because you have to, you sit there with the gear lever in front of you and a little hatch, you haven't got a tiny lot to see through, and accelerator, I can't remember the accelerator, but, and as you drive along, you move it with the tillers, it breaks one track on the other. It reminds me of another story. And to change gear, that's right, you have to go, and you have to do it really fast, because clutches burn out quickly. So I had a drive, and it wasn't long, maybe 5 minutes, but it's a big, it's a big thing for me. This Scottish chap had a go, and as he was doing it, the brakes started failing again. So we're going back, and he's driving it back, and he said, I don't know how he told us, but we knew that they were failing. And we got up to the tank gate, and instead of switching the engine off, he rang the tank gate down, rolled right over it, and it was made of all timbers and barbed wire, and it was all round the tracks, all round the sprocket, and it was flattened. And so a camp policeman, I don't know, a regimental policeman was there, had to undo the gate for us. And he was aghast, So he said, oh, I'll have to go and report this. So we got some of the lads, and we come and cut all the wires off, and all the barbed wire that's all around. We got it out, and the company sergeant major came. He was the orderly sergeant. And he said, right, he said, well, what are you going to do about this? The RSM, he said, if you can make another gate before the RSM comes back, he wasn't there for the day, he says, you'll be all right. So we didn't work in the afternoon, so we got the tank back, pulled all this gate out of the way, and everybody in the LAD all went down there, welders and everything, and we cut stuff, and we made a beautiful gate, a steel gate, and put it up. By the time we got in, it was okay. That was just one of the stories. But I started sailing there.
Tell me about that. Well, on a bit of lake, you mean? Yeah.
It came up on a notice, anybody who wants to do some sailing in the afternoon, there was an officer who was going to take us down. Now, bear in mind, these officers, most of them Sandhurst men, and they were good. There's no doubt about it. They're a different class altogether. Anyway, we went down, I think about 15 of us went down, and we did some sailing, and this Captain Tudor, I think his name was, he took us, and he wasn't all that good a sailor himself, but he was good enough to show us. And they had the regimental boat, which was a bit kind of knocked about a bit, and the next day there was about half. The next day there were just two of us, who was a friend of mine. His name was Dickinson, he was a full corporal, and he was a smashing chap. Anyway, so he and I went, and we learned to sail there, and but then we took it back to our camp. We arranged transport, and we did it up in our afternoons. We painted it and repaired bits and did all this, that and the other. Only to find, as soon as it was back and looking smart, one of the regimental corporals took it over. Because this was an all-ranks, we went to an all-ranks sailing club. There's a lot of clubs along there. And we used to race in the afternoon. And I raced three times with a captain who was in the club. And he won every race. He was really good. And what had happened, you start off in no jackets or anything, just a pair of shorts, and it's like being in the sea there. You can't see the coastline on the other side. And we go out about 2 o'clock, and we'd sail, and it would be dead calm, and he'd have a cigarette, and that showing the way the wind was going. He didn't smoke, but he did the cigarette. And as the afternoon went on, always the same, the wind got up, we'd come back with a spanking sail at the end of it. And we'd been out, 3 hours. Enormous races they were. You don't sail.